Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Monday afternoon. Here we go with multiple shows per week. It must be the NBA season. Joining us from Memphis, Tennessee, where he's covering the Nets-Grizzlies game tonight, is the fabulous Nick Friedel.
B, Mr. Lopez, it is always good to be with you.
For those of you watching on YouTube, you'll see that Nick is sitting, even though he's on the road, he's sitting in front of Alabama gear. Do you travel with this and hang it on your hotel room walls?
I'd like to give a shout out to my cousin's wife, to Charlie, who is a diehard Alabama fan and represents proudly wherever he goes. No, I am still in mourning over the ridiculous bad calls at the end of the Syracuse-Clemson game on Saturday. I wish that it had turned out differently, but they always have Notre Dame this week to get them right.
Speaking of YouTube, we could promote Tim McMahon's new YouTube show, but I can't remember what the name of it is. Joining us from New Orleans, Louisiana.
Howdy, partners!
Our New Orleans writer, our New Orleans-based writer, Andrew Lopez. Hello, Andrew. You had a busy day already today.
I was going to say, can we promote Tim's show that I was already on this morning? His new YouTube.
He's doubled up on my guests? No.
Wait, which Tim? Right now. They both have YouTube shows. It's terrifying.
I've been on both shows already. I've been. It's like, hey, let's just get Lopez out the way early.
Look, the Hoop Collective, where we have everybody on from our staff, is my show. Anybody else who does that, I don't know what they're talking about. This is, by the way, I have to say, this is the beginning of our sixth year on the Hoop Collective. Thank you for listening all these years. Nick couldn't even grow a beard when we first started this show. Andrew,
no, I've got great.
I still can't grow a beard. I've never been able to.
Andrew was covering LSU when we started this show. Speaking of Louisiana, the Pelicans are off to a 2-1 start. They had a tough loss to the Utah Jazz on Sunday night. We're going to talk about the Jazz in a minute, and not in that way either, if you can believe it. But the Pelicans they lost that game in overtime, Andrew.
Yeah,
I don't want to take anything away from the Jazz, but the outcome was somewhat impacted by Brandon Ingram going out with a concussion-like symptom and Zion going out with a, what are they calling it, posterior hip
contusion. He has he's a bruised butt. That's pretty
fell
much.
He fell on his butt, and he fell hard on his butt, and it hurt. And it looked like it hurt.
Can you imagine how hard Zion had to fall to really hurt that butt specifically?
he was going up for a big dunk, and it looked like it was a breakaway slam. Credit to Jordan Clarkson, by the way, for not giving up on that play. He makes contact with the ball.
That's something that's been rarely said.
I was going to say, wow.
Z takes a very hard fall, and hopefully it won't be, won't be too
much. He jumps with so much height and force. And the other thing is that Tracy McGrady once gave me a dissertation. I think I was hanging out in the green room with Tracy McGrady and Vince Carter once. And they were
what a humble brag.
A moment for that drop.
What a humble brag.
Wow, that was great.
Listen, if I really wanted to do that stuff, I'd start talking about Scottie Pippen, some of the stuff that he told me, but I will not do that. Scotty got loose a few times, man. All right. I love Scotty, though. My God, I loved hanging out with him. Tracy McGrady and Vince Carter gave me this dissertation one time about 1 foot, jumping off 1 foot and jumping off 2 feet, and how when they evaluate dunks, one of the first things they look at is which foot did he jump off of, or did he jump off of both feet? Did he jump off his dominant foot or not? Zion jumps off of both feet. And so he comes up in the air like a freaking pogo stick. And that also means that he's always high off the ground. He doesn't have one leg higher than the other. So when he comes down, he's always coming down from a huge distance, which is why you're worried about his knees. Andrew, he blocked that shot. Was that in Charlotte the other night where he blocked that shot? His head was, I saw a rear angle.
It was last night. It was last night. It was, I think it was like a Kelly Olynyk scoop shot. His head was, at the rim.
Right. And his feet were equally high. So when that man goes up, he really goes up. But assuming that he gets past this bruise, I think more importantly, I think the Pelicans are one of the stories of the Western Conference so far. They look legit. Tell me, I don't know what's going to happen. Who are they playing tomorrow? Or they're playing Dallas tomorrow?
They're playing the Dallas Mavericks Tuesday night. They will, I think, Brandon Ingram, Zion Williamson, and Herb Jones all probably be questionable. Maybe all three get a rest night then. Brandon could be in concussion protocol by then. There is still some time left on that clock. They initially ruled him out with a head injury and were evaluating him for concussion-like symptoms. They're trying to see where he is. So maybe he misses a few. Maybe Z misses one. Maybe Herb misses one. Well, they'll see. But
all right, so I'm not going to overreact to the Utah loss, although the Jazz did a great job taking it. I'm not going to overreact to the game that they might what might happen against Dallas if those guys are out. I'm going to react to what I saw the first couple games, especially the game in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And I'd like you to tell me this team. we addressed it briefly last week, but this team looks like it could be pretty good.
Very good. As long as they compete on the defensive end, I will say the one thing. Obviously, Brandon goes out early in that. I think he gets hurt in the first quarter against Utah, and things kind of started to spiral out of control from there. But as long as they compete on the defensive end, they have a chance to be pretty good. And the one thing I saw was they came out ready against the Brooklyn Nets. I was sitting next to Nick, and we were watching that first quarter. Was it 32-14, the end of the first quarter? And, you know, it was just, okay, this team can be really good. Offensively, this team is not going to have a problem. They are never going to have a problem as long as they are healthy. Even without Brandon and Z, they go on a 22-3 run against Utah to take the lead in the fourth quarter before they kind of lost a little bit of steam there in overtime. So they are offensively just everything we thought they would be. Just when you think it's a big three and it's CJ and Brandon and Zion, JV goes out and drops 30 against the Hornets with their more traditional big. So they have a lot of different things that they can throw at you. And I think as long as they compete on the defensive end, and that's going to be the key for them all year, they can be a very, very good team. Offensively, it's going to be what we thought. They put up, 130
Averaging 100. Now they did get an overtime to goose that number a little bit against the Jazz, but they're averaging 125 points a game. So
and I think they only scored like 5 or 6 points in overtime. It wasn't like they scored a bunch.
It was not a high quality overtime from the other side. I watched it.
No. So the offense is going to be there. It's just a matter of the defense is going to be there.
Also, I want to point out in that opening game against Brooklyn, who we're going to talk about in a minute with Mr. Friedel, they got up 102 shots in that game. In the game against Utah, which they lost, and again, it was overtime, so they also got off 102 shots. I think they had 89 against Hornets.
Yeah. A lot more foul calls against the Hornets to kind of negate some field goal attempts.
Just remember that the guy who's running the organization, David Griffin, if you trace back his roots, his roots are in the 7 seconds or less Suns. That was where he was for many years. That's why Mike D'Antoni is a coaching. What's his title, Andrew?
Coaching consultant. Kind of right. Shows up at training camp, shows up when they play in Texas, and then maybe some other good trips that he wants to be on.
But he's right. Maybe he'll go on that. They're about to go on a tough road trip, but this is what I'm getting to.
Yeah.
I don't care what happens on Tuesday, if they lose that game, whatever, but they go the next 4 games after that. I think they play both LA teams, they play Phoenix, and then they come home and play Golden State.
Correct.
So roughly 7-8 days from now, we're going to have a good feel. Hopefully Ingram and Zion are back. But their basis is, you know, the guy who runs the team wants to play fast, and that seems to be what they're doing.
Yeah, and Willie Green figured that out. Looking back at numbers, he's talked about this several times in the preseason. He's kind of figured out that they have, when they shot between 16 and 24 seconds on the shot clock, they were very good last year, and we kind of looked at those numbers, and it kind of backs it up. So they've been practicing with a 16-second shot clock in training. Well, they were doing that in training camp, and they did that, have been doing that at times. So talked to CJ McCollum about it, and he said, look, it's kind of difficult. You're you know, you're bringing the ball up and then you look up and, oh, it's 12 seconds to get in your set and get moving. But it's getting them to play faster. And I think while they're doing that, the other big key.
So 16 seconds or less. The book that you're going to write after they win the title will be 16 seconds or less, not 7 seconds or less.
Exactly. Okay. So the other thing is, this is just a ridiculous offensive rebounding team. They were already really good without Zion. 2 years ago, they were the best team in the league. The team behind them was the Memphis Grizzlies. You took the center off of that team, the number two team, Jonas Valanciunas, and put him with Zion, and they are just annihilating teams on the offensive glass. I think they still have like a 40. It's above 40 on their offensive rebounding percentage so far. The big thing against the Nets was had 36 second chance points. Valanciunas,
I'm not sure this is going to last. He's averaging six offensive rebounds. He's averaging six offensive rebounds a game.
I will say some of the offensive. There was a set last night where he literally, I think he got four offensive rebounds in the same possession because he was just tipping it in. That's his thing. But so he'll get a few of those a game where he's playing. He's going to get tips and do that. But I don't know if they sustain 40%, but they are going to just annihilate you on the offensive glass. And I think that is kind of where this team is very, very scary. Then they get out. They're not really taking that many threes. I think they took a lot of threes against Utah, but again, Brandon's out, Zion's out for, you know, the final 13, 14 minutes or whatever it was. But that's where I think that they're just going to crush you in the paint. They're going to be okay with taking a lot of mid-ranges, and then they'll hit the three when it's there.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Nick, you got to see him in the opener. Got to see Zion for the first time in a while. He took 22 shots in the paint that night. Now, I don't know how often he's going to get 22 shots in the paint, but he is – you know, showing some interesting, you know, an interesting stuff after being out for a year.
He's awesome. And Andrew and I were sitting there, and that's all I kept saying was this guy is awesome.
Can confirm.
And the juxtaposition of watching Zion, who hadn't played in over a year, and Ben Simmons, who hasn't played in like a year and a half, was really something, because Zion looked like he just hit the ground literally running and doing whatever he wanted offensively, and the Nets didn't have an answer. And Ben Simmons looks like he's got a lot of rust in his game that he's going to have to knock off. And to the point about the amount of shots they were getting and the possessions, and Andrew noted the shot clock that they practice with, the Pelicans do. What it reminds me of, guys, is like one of these college football offenses where you get the run and gun, either coordinator or coach in there, and all they're trying to do the whole game is just run you. And they have the guns offensively to do it. Zion is an absolute superstar if he stays healthy. But it was really something interesting. And B, you've covered the league longer than both of us. The stars always know. And in the lead up to that New Orleans game, KD, while he's saying Zion's one of one, incredible player, looking forward to seeing him, he's also saying in the same breath, they also have Brandon Ingram, who he loves, and CJ McCollum, who he loves. So we could talk about Herb Jones and the defense that he gives his team and the pace they want to play with under Willie Green. All well and good, but they have three offensive weapons that can get seemingly whatever they want whenever they want it. And that was Kevin's point, and I think that was really crucial when you're trying to see not only what the Pelicans are now, but what they could continually build upon throughout the year and be in the postseason.
I'm close to issuing an edict. I'm going to say this for a few weeks, and I probably won't do it, but I'm close to issuing an edict banning Laker talk until they're relevant.
Please. But I have enough to say, on the Lakers. I don't even want to mention the Lakers. They're horrible.
Well, you said it twice.
I'm done. There you go.
I do think it's relevant to talk about the Laker game Sunday night, only to say that Dame Lillard, who I was a little bit worried about in the preseason because he's coming off the abdominal surgery, and he didn't look good. He didn't play that much in the preseason, but he shot the ball really poorly. He's had back-to-back 40-point games, and he just got named Player of the Week. That's what I would be talking about coming out of the Laker game. But I do think it's important to point out, Andrew, that the Pelicans own the Lakers pick swap this year.
Yeah, one of my favorite things on Twitter so far has been Laker fans who think, oh, okay, we'll just be bad this year. We'll tank for Wembanyama. And then it's Pelican fans who are quick to get in there and remind them that you cannot tank for Victor.
Right. It's an unprotected pick swap. I'm fairly certain, I should have checked before I say this, and I'll probably get I'll get a text from Bobby Marks. Fairly certain you can trade that swap. And one of the things that I've talked about as I've evaluated this team throughout the league is because I think that, I think we're going to see some maneuvering this year. When I judge how teams are going to be, I think about what they can do in the season to improve. Now, the Pelicans are fairly deep.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about them is they have some tradable contracts, although less since they extended guys like Larry Nance would have been one. They extended him, but they have Devontae Graham, who, they have extra guards, and they have extra first round picks that they own beyond theirs. And they have that pick swap, which would be extremely valuable. So I'm not saying they're going to trade it. I'm just saying that.
I think they like that positioning right now.
Well, in the Wembanyama draft, I agree. But I'm just saying, like, not only are the Pelicans, in have good depth and everything like that, but I mean, they're right. Upwardly mobile with what they can do. The only thing about the Pelicans is spending. They've never been a tax paying team. And so I don't think you're going to see, them necessarily take on a whole bunch more money. They're kind of up against it when they, but there was a reason why the Durant was mentioned about the Pelicans when, and I mean, I would not trade Brandon Ingram. I would not trade Brandon Ingram for Kevin Durant. I'm going to tell you that right now. But I'm just saying there was a reason why the Pelicans were mentioned as a possible Durant location, because not only do they have the team that Durant might want to play for, but they have the ammunition to do a trade. So I think that's relevant. All right, the Brooklyn Nets. Now, they play tonight against the Grizzlies, so we're going to be behind the eight ball a little bit on this. We're going to be behind the folks listening to this podcast. They're going to know what happened in that game, and we don't know right now. That's the nature of a daylight pod. We're sorry. Nick, I want to point something out, though. And I know that we've played 1 week, small sample size, et cetera, but I want to say that the Nets ranked 28th in defense the first 7 days of the season, first three games. This was their biggest Achilles heel last year. It was the reason why their championship odds were preposterous all year long. It was their Achilles heel when they did get to the postseason. Tell me that their defense is going to improve. I know that their shooting is going to improve. They did not shoot the ball well in the preseason. They have not shot the ball great so far, but Joe Harris is back, and hopefully at some point Seth Curry is going to come back. What about their defense? Because that's the big red letter as far as I can see right now.
I can't sit here and tell you that it's going to improve that much. I think they've got to build chemistry, B, and that only comes with playing together. And that is a huge part of learning what Simmons wants to do on the floor, getting everybody to buy in. Nick Claxton has had a nice couple games, but I mean, my gosh, if he gets into any kind of foul trouble, again, Andrew and I watched it. If Nick Claxton goes down on this Nets team, goodbye, because they just don't have that other piece down low. But I don't see the Nets being able to develop at a defensive level to a point where you can think they can legitimately contend for a title. I think they can win a lot of regular season games. They're going to be much better than what we've seen to this point, on top of getting Harris back fully, getting Seth Curry back on the floor. Kevin and Kyrie have a great chemistry between them, and they're going to learn each other. But B, you and I talked about this before the season. The only way that the Nets can turn things down the road to me is by making a deal. Is that Miles Turner? Is that somebody else? Who knows? But I can't sit here, not only watching the preseason, watching these first couple games in the regular season, and tell you that the defense is going to improve to a level where you feel like they can legitimately make it happen in the postseason. I don't think they have the parts right now to do that, although I'm waiting to see what Simmons looks like a couple months from now compared to where he is in the moment.
How come how come Ben Simmons hasn't made more of an impact?
Because he looks right now like the player who we saw at the end of his time in Philadelphia. That's probably the best answer that I could give. Tim Legler talked about it the other night on SportsCenter after that first game. He just does not look comfortable offensively at all. He wants no part of any kind of jump shot. And we're not even talking about a three-point shot. We're talking about anything that's not a couple feet from the rim. And he has no desire to go to the free throw line. So you're taking a player who is incredibly talented, but is so limited in what he's able to provide right now. I do think his confidence will improve the more he plays. And that's why anybody who says, oh, we're never going to see the old Simmons, I don't agree with that so much yet, because he's the first one to point out he's only played six games in a year and a half.
Yeah.
So let's give it a little bit more time. But the reason why Simmons hasn't shown more and the Nets haven't been able to do more with him on the floor is because his confidence right now is not where they need it to be if they want to be one of the better teams in the East.
Yeah, maybe he'll take six free throws tonight, but he's so far this season, he's taken two free throws.
And he missed them both.
Ideal. Yeah, I've said this. I don't care if he doesn't take a shot outside the paint the whole year. I seriously don't. I would say the same thing about Zion, by the way. I know early in his career it was like take threes. I don't know where they are with this, Andrew. I know they've got their shooting coach, Fred Vinson, who is well known for helping shots. Honestly, he's so good inside the paint. I would say, Zion, you don't have to shoot outside.
He does have, you mentioned the 22 shots in the paint in the first game against the Nets. He followed that up with, I think, 19 against Charlotte and 16 against the Jazz. So 57 shots so far this season. Every shot has been in the paint so far.
Love it. Ben Simmons, watch the game film. I honestly don't care if Ben Simmons even scores that much, but Ben Simmons has got to be awesome defensively. He's got to be able to guard 1 through 5. He's got to be able to defend the rim. He's got to be able to pick balls off the backboard and start fast breaks running. Because he is a great passer in transition. In fact, his rim, you know, his outlet passing is an underrated skill of his. Honestly, I don't care if he averages less than 10 points a game. They shouldn't need offensive help. He's got to be a defensive playmaker. He's got to use his hands to get into passing lanes. He's got to be the guy who, when another perimeter scorer is going off, that they put him on him and make it hard. Like, that's got to be his role. That's where he's going to earn his money. He doesn't have to be an all-star offensive player. He needs to be what Herb Jones is for the Pelicans, who works so hard and has such great range, but he's so much stronger than Herb Jones that he should be even more versatile in such a way as Friedel. And so All I've seen from Ben Simmons defensively the first few games is fouling. Now, again, I don't know what's going to happen tonight. And the Grizzlies are a little banged up right now, especially with their bigs. So we'll see. But I haven't seen it yet.
And the key with what you just mentioned with Simmons is he continues to be in foul trouble. He fouled out a preseason game in Minnesota about a week ago, like 12 or 13 minutes. I've never even seen that. I don't even know.
I've seen it in summer league.
Right. I mean, Montrezl Harrell did it in preseason. He was he fouled out a minute sooner, which is pretty incredible, but that list is not long. And in that first game, Andrew and I were at when the Nets played the Pelicans, fouled out really quickly. His timing
22-23 minutes.
Yeah, it was rough.
He's averaging a foul so far. And again, we're in sample size, you know, minutia right now, but he's averaging one foul every 7 minutes so far.
And the timing's not there. There's a lot of rust. But again, B, I think the offense is going to help set up his defense. And I'm with you. He doesn't need to go jack up threes that he's not going to make or even take 18-footers that he also probably isn't going to make. What he needs to do is be able to run what they need offensively and get other people open and create easier looks for everybody else. He's shown that in very small glimpses to this point, but I think that will help him get more comfortable on the other end as well. It's just the Nets don't have a lot of time with the way their schedule is set up to wait that long, because while we're taping this prior to the Memphis game, Wednesday they play Milwaukee. Thursday they come home and play Luka and the Mavs. In about a week and a half, they go on a West Coast swing, and they've got a bunch of games that you look at and go, oh, I mean, I don't know. They've got back-to-back home games against the Pacers, and they play the Wizards.
Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. That should help, right?
It should. But they don't have the type of softball schedule that they might have, weirdly, because the league was holding out hope that Kevin Durant was going to stay or go or do whatever he was going to do. And their schedule got all thrown around because now they have all these national TV games that were supposed to be that aren't. And they've got a really tough November with a lot of road games that are going to be difficult for them, for a team that's still trying to learn itself together.
It's obviously super early for them. They've got injuries. They've got the Simmons uncertainty. But, you know, seeing them give up 130 on opening night wasn't good. And then they got beat at home. And then they won a game at home. Who they beat at home?
They beat Toronto. And it is worth noting in that game, in the last couple minutes, they reverted to what we saw throughout the second half of last season. Kevin, ISO, he's Kevin Durant, so he hits an unbelievable shot. Kyrie, ISO, he hits an unbelievable shot. Toronto forced. Nick Nurse forced Kyrie to give up the ball late in that game. He passed it to a wide open Royce O'Neal, who had been 1-for-6. Royce O'Neal nailed the shot. Now, can he do that over and over again? Time will tell. But that was not a play that we would have seen last season, and certainly not a make that occurred that often for Brooklyn. So that was a good sign. But when you start pairing up what they have top to bottom on the roster right now and what these other teams have, whom they're going to face in the next couple of weeks, it's not great for them.
All right, we'll be monitoring that tonight. I'm going to be seeing how that game is. See how they defend Ja. Let's see how they defend Ja. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket. With Vivid Seat Rewards, score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, hoodie teenagers, barrel sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now is the time in the show where we say, what the bleep is going on in Utah?
Why? Why would they do that? Very strange trade.
Why would you do that?
The Jazz are... Now, the Jazz play tonight, okay? So we have to asterisk this again. They play the Rockets, who are 0-3. It is the second night of a back-to-back, though, after a third game of a road trip, after an overtime game. So I'm not sure what we're going to see tonight. But obviously the Jazz have been one of the surprises, probably the biggest surprise in the first week.
Yeah.
And you saw them in New Orleans last night, Andrew, where they won a game on a Kelly Olynyk scoop shot off a broken play. It was a pretty remarkable way to win a game. It kind of summed it up. They won the couple days before in overtime in Minnesota, where they sort of survived that one. What were your takeaways from watching them? Sort of the team of the week, 3-0 out of the gates.
First of all, on that final possession that ended with the Olynyk scoop shot, it was a great play design by Will Hardy to send the crossing guys and basically force, because the Pelicans had Herb Jones had fouled out at this point, so your best defender is off the floor. Also, there's no JV, there's no Brandon, and there's no Z on the floor. So four of your starters are out if you're New Orleans at this point. But you have Trey Murphy and Najee Marshall who are going to be there, and they force like a three-way switch that leaves CJ on Kelly Olynyk, and Kelly Olynyk was kind of be able to just use his size to get that scoop shot. So one, that was a great play design by them to force that switch and get the matchup that they wanted out of that. But it was a team that just plays hard, and they are going to just do that, I think, all year. And I think is that going to mean they're going to have a winning record? I don't know, but I don't. I think eventually, you will regress to the mean of what I think everybody thinks they were going to be this year, but you coming out with Lauri Markkanen basically playing the three, a role that he got, I think, a lot more comfortable in Cleveland last year. Vanderbilt's guarding, the top interior guy on there. He was mostly drawing the Z assignment for most of the game last night. Olynyk can still shoot. Jordan Clarkson he has no conscience when it comes to shooting, so he's just going to let a bunch of things fly. You're bringing Sexton off the bench. The bones are there, and if this team is just going to try to play hard every night, where some teams, and maybe that is what happened in these three games. Larry Nance said it last night. I asked, what was the difference in the first half before you guys came back in the second half? And Utah played harder than us. They were ready to play and we weren't. And maybe that's the key for them early in the season, is seeing teams, it's an early season game. You're trying to, okay, maybe I can steal rest here and buy a first quarter or two. And you can't. I mean, they're just going to come out and play hard every night. And I think that's what kind of stood out the most to me, aside from the fact that they have a bunch of guys who can just score. Lauri looked really good last night. I wonder how he played in Eurobasket is kind of bleeding into the season so far. He just looks very confident so far.
Yeah, I asked some people who are close to him about this, actually. Did, was it Eurobasket? Because he was the star for Finland in Eurobasket. Yeah. We talked a little bit about it. First off, he looks pretty cut, too. But it's kind of like when the sun is shining, everything looks a little nicer. Like, I checked, and his weight isn't actually that much different. He looks like his arms are like more cut, but he may be slightly a little bit heavier with muscle, but it's not significant. And And I asked about that. I said, is this a product of the Eurobasket or whatever? And so the thing I was told was that, a thing for European players coming to the NBA is fit, where they go. And obviously his fit in Chicago was not great. Last year in Cleveland, his stats were about the same. But remember, they had a bunch of guys who they were going, featuring over him, but he played small forward. Yeah. And it was kind of considered laughable. Like, how can you have this 7-footer? I don't know if he's listed at 7 feet or 6'11", but how can you have this 7-footer, play there? And, he got torched occasionally, but there were also games where he did okay, And so his scoring in Cleveland last year, he averaged 15 points. He shot 44%. His 3-point shooting was, down 4 points from his last year in Chicago. It wasn't like, oh man, he was really gearing up. But from what I am told, he just, he didn't feel comfortable in Chicago. He felt a little bit more comfortable in Cleveland. That made his outlook improve. And he was more assertive when he played for Finland, and he feels really comfortable in Utah. And I don't know. I mean, that could be related to the fact that he's on a team with no expectations. He was traded for Jimmy Butler. So he was, come in to be expected to be a dominating force in Chicago. And people were always underwhelmed. They always thought he should have been better than he was. Even in his second year, when he averaged like 19 and 9, there was this expectation he was going to get better, and he really didn't. And the Chicago team, you covered those teams a little bit, Nick, right? I mean, that's, people were always underwhelmed by him there.
Very much so. And they thought that he was going to be the difference maker in that deal. I just want to take a moment to let another person who's usually on this podcast know that you and I were absolutely right so far about Lauri Markkanen. And he's not terrible. He's not terrible. He's pretty good, actually, so far. So let's just let that sink in and marinate for a moment, because Markkanen, in this first week or two and coming off what he did over the summer, has been the kind of player that the Bulls thought he could, that the Cavs were hoping he would be when they signed him. And now, with zero expectations, he's found a role in a place that needs him to be more of that alpha player that all these other teams were hoping to see. So I think the fit for him is important right now. I just don't buy that Utah, with Danny Ainge and the horde of picks that he has, is going to allow this team to win and win and win.
Well, I don't even think it'll come to that. I think what Andrew said, I think especially early in the season, if you play hard and you're in better shape, which the Jazz look like they're in good shape, and part of it is that they're younger, and certainly Markkanen is. He came off playing Eurobasket. I think that it can make a difference. I don't think this team is headed for some surprise playoff run. But I do think that, Lowry's play is worth noting. I mean, he's averaging 24 points. We'll see if that lasts. I also point out Jordan Clarkson. Now, this is something to watch. Jordan Clarkson is a guy who's been in and out of trade talks. Now, this is I think they're holding on to Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah, I think they're holding on. Jordan Clarkson is gone. Are you kidding me? He will right. be long gone. Well,
and I think Jordan Clarkson, I don't know, but I suspect Jordan Clarkson is trying to play in a way that hastens that maneuver. He's basically averaged 2 assists in his career. Assists per game is 2.6. He's averaged 2.5 the last 2 years. He averaged 3 one time back when he played half a Lakers season in 2017-18. He averaged 3 assists. He's averaging 6 assists almost. Again, we'll see what happens tonight in Houston. I don't know. Averaging 6 assists per game. His usage rate is down. So that means he's actually getting the ball less, but distributing it more. He's shooting, again, 3 games. He's shooting better. He's on a hot streak shooting from the outside. But he's like totally playing with maximum effort. He's totally playing under control. He's like, Andrew's like on his best behavior. because I think he would love to have an opportunity to go someplace that's not in a full rebuild. And I think the Jazz would love him to get good value. So I think they're getting best behavior Jordan Clarkson so far. I think that's also making a factor.
Down the stretch last night, though, he just looked like he might want to stay because he gets everything he wants down the stretch of a game. Everything was running through Jordan Clarkson last night. Laurie had, I think, 29 points up to a certain point. I think he finished with 31. And up to a certain point, Laurie just disappeared late. And it became the Jordan Clarkson show. It was a nice little CJ Jordan Clarkson duel for
a little while there.
It was
who doesn't tune in for that?
NBA basketball, it's fantastic.
It was, look, some of the shots were questionable at best, but I think some of them were going in, especially, I mean, the one that, you know, the Pelicans kind of knew who was taking the last shot going into overtime when Utah had a shot. But like, it was, is he showcasing himself? Maybe. Would he like to probably get out and be on a contender? I think everybody wants to be on a contender at this point, but I think he's going to enjoy this process while he's still there.
Well, so Clarkson has a player option for next year, I believe, for $14.2 million. So he's a candidate for an extension if he were to get traded. I don't know for sure. Obviously, you know, Mike Conley, who has a partial guarantee, I think he's guaranteed $7 or $8 million of $24 million next year. That's a harder, I think, one to trade. But I think if you're looking at tradable assets, you're looking at definitely Jordan Clarkson. Malik Beasley, who had a terrific second half against his old team, the Minnesota Timberwolves, over the weekend, he has a attractive team option for $16.5 million next year. That's an attractive player as well. Rudy Gay, not as much. He's got a $6.5 million player option for next year. But you know, those are the guys I think you're looking at possibly getting traded. You know, and I don't think it's so much that the Jazz are not going to let this team, win, and you know, I can't let them win too many games and mess up the Wembanyama. I think they're going to lose plenty of games, but I think if you're going to win in the early part of the season, you're going to engage your fan base, you're going to build up your head coach, you're going to give your players an opportunity to see what your head coach is doing is working, and you're going to build the value of your players. I mean, that's what they should be doing, and eventually they're going to start losing. So, but it's a terrific start for them, and you know, they're probably not going to have too many great weeks this season. And I don't want to, you know, denigrate them at all. Maybe they will have some. I don't think they're going to win, 12 games. I don't think they're going to win 32 either. So, but it was, I watched the end of their games against Minnesota and New Orleans, and they did some good things under pressure. You know, Will Hardy drew up some good stuff. And look, Will Hardy, I mean, he was under Popovich for years. That's where he trained. He was he was on the coaching staff for Team USA, and did some good stuff there. I mean, he's young. He's the youngest coach in the league, but he has a good resume. And of course, he was in Boston last year, where he was Ime Udoka's lead assistant. There's a lot of belief that he could be one of the league's best young coaches, or have a real good chance to be a coach. He's kind of reminiscent of Brad Stevens. Sort of young, who was also experienced, and a tactician, a guy who was known for, tremendous, play design and stuff like that. And who hired Brad Stevens in Boston, Danny Ainge, who hired Will Hardy in Utah, Danny Ainge. I think there's some of the same attributes. And by the way, Brad Stevens drew up some really good stuff his first year in Boston. They were in a full rebuild and they stunk. And you could see that Brad Stevens had good promise as a coach. And you could see that their team was rather obviously in a full rebuild move. And I think you'll see the same thing here in Utah, but give them their due for sure. Before we go, Andrew, you have some update, I think, on Brandon Ingram. It will be old news by this time, but just to clean it up from earlier.
Brandon Ingram has just been placed in concussion protocol, according to the New Orleans Pelicans. Remember, they originally announced that as a head injury and he was being evaluated for concussion-like symptoms. When we spoke to Willie Green at around noon on Monday, which was still in the time frame where they could put him in protocol, Willie Green said that at the moment, Brandon was not in protocol. And now here, 3:30 Central on Monday, Brandon has been placed into protocol. So they have to now he has to clear that before he is able to play. I think the hope may still be that they could possibly get him back for one of those LA games next week. Dallas, yeah, Phoenix on Friday. Yeah, he can't
rush the protocol. It's too bad, too, because it was friendly fire injury, right?
Yes. Najee Marshall was the guy who hit him in the nose. And
basically
didn't look,
punched him in the face accidentally.
Yes, and right? It didn't really look. They were both going up for an errant deep Utah pass. Didn't really look like much at first. He kind of just got him, like, right on the bridge in the nose. At first, it could have seemed like maybe it was even a broken nose or anything. Brandon did get back in the game. He said he was fine, and then got back out there and could tell that something was wrong and immediately checked himself out. And
let's put it this process. Way. We've seen more violent punches in the NBA so far this season than that
yes.
one.
Yes, we have. And it's kind of funny because Najee might be his best guy on the team. Him, Najee, and Jose. That's the kind of the one of the groups. Yeah. So the fact that Najee kind of did it to him, I'm sure Najee's hearing that right now.
We'll see how the Pelicans handle this little injury thing early in the season. All right. Thank you, Nick Friedel. Enjoy Memphis Nets tonight. Thank you, Andrew Lopez, for keeping us updated on the Pelicans. Thank you to our producers, Jackson and Bruce. We will be with you with two guys. I can't remember their names. I usually have them around at the end of the week and talk to you on Friday.
My name? What the hell are you talking about, Brian?
One of them is easily imitatable, I've heard. The other one's a Texan. Have a good week. We'll talk to you soon.